outside the box of religious obligation lies a road less travelled, into the heart of the Father's affection. Slinging freedom all over the place, this is the God Journey.
Well, Kyle, I finally got an email from God.
Okay.
I have been thinking this would be a great thing. I go out and, you know, prayer walk, talk to God about things. Wouldn't it be awesome to come back and there's like in your inbox the answers to the things you were asking from Jesus or God or Holy Spirit or something? I always thought that would be awesome.
Okay.
So the other morning I'm out and me and Jesus are having a bit of a conversation because I feel like there's something he's asked me to do in the world that I would rather not do. And it's not because I don't love him. I do love him. It's because I just don't want to be that guy who does that thing. And I'll talk more about it as we go, I guess. And I started last week, as a matter of fact, I put up the first chapter of a book I'm writing called It's Time, Letters for the Bride at the End of the Age. And so I put the first one up last week. I don't know when I'll put the next chapter up because I've struggled with this. I feel like almost a year and a half ago, as Sarah was kind of finding her way through some of that stuff, I just felt like God said, will you speak for me again? Which I thought meant, would you write another book for me? Yeah. So it's like, okay, yeah, I'm old enough. I don't need to write another book. I don't need to have something more in the world than all the stuff I've already got in the world. So I haven't been I'm playing with some plot things for books that might be fun, like the Jake Colson sequel, though that kind of lost track. But anyway, writing this book as if Jesus is coming in the next 12 to 15 years. And what would people want to know now? How might we prep for that? How might Jesus be inviting us into that space? And I feel like with that is a wave of growing awareness that Jesus wants to do in the hearts of people. So I'm out walking with him. My question is, and when I'm asking this kind of stuff with him, I'm thinking this, as I'm asking, I'm thinking, it's going to take 2 or 3 months to find the answer to this thing. I'm sure of it. Because okay. It's one of those really deep questions, like, what keeps that from happening now? In other words, I don't think God like has special visitation. So in 2024, I'm going to visit in a way I haven't in 2023 or 2022.
Yeah.
That's the whole revival mentality. So it's just always kind of, okay, God's finally moving again. And Jesus says, my Father's always working. So yeah. I think very differently about those things than a lot of my friends do at times. And so I'm asking, so what if I start talking about this, what's going to be different? Are you going to do more than you've done? And that kind of upsets my yuck meter. And the other thing is, oh, so you can ask more of us. We've got to do something we haven't been doing, which also pegs my yuck meter, because now it's going to be a performance-based thing. So I'm really just saying, God, I kind of like to know what would make this valuable in the world? What are you asking of people or you're going to do that makes sense of what I feel like? And I'm saying this about the book I'm working on. I've said, this is a book for the last generation of brothers and sisters who are alive at the return of the Lord. That may be us. That may be 100 years from now. I have no idea. I'm not a prophet in terms of setting dates. But I want to know why would there be some value? And I do see things that I know God wants me to write about the resilience of faith and the depth of love and helping people discover that reality. But I'm trying to figure out, why would it be different than what people have been trying to do for the last 2,000 years?
Okay.
And I come home and jump on the computer and I get an email and it's from a friend of mine, Matt, in Australia.
Okay.
And this is what I read. Truth has been weaponized by the enemy to shift the focus from Jesus. The truth, as many believers see it, has been removed from him who is the truth. It's a talk about him and his truth rather than with him. Being loved by him and growing in his love is truth. Truth in this sense is dynamic and intrinsically linked to our relationship of love in him. No need to defend here or indoctrinate, but live moment by moment inside his love. I used to think I had the truth. That's all that mattered. Now he has me, and I marvel at the changes he has made in me as we go deeper into his love, which is also known as his truth. This is real and gets hard and very personal as he untangles the many years of living in a sin-filled, trauma-inducing world, but oh, how glorious it is. We are on the front line of a war. We will never fully understand this side of the second coming. He has left us his spirit and himself, which is life itself and all we ever need. That first line, we have weaponized truth, which, I'd be honest, I think Christianity's been doing since the second generation after the early apostles.
Yeah.
Somehow we embedded it in doctrine and principles and creeds and theological understandings that may be true with a small t. Mm-hmm. And here's what I heard in that. We have weaponized truth instead of embodying truth with a capital T. Does that make sense?
Oh my gosh, yes.
And it, for me, it just was like, okay, there is a shift. Now, it's not, we got to do more works. Mm-hmm. It's not God's calling to get his act together and try and love the world. But that we have lost sight of who he is because we're more preoccupied with what we call truth. Mm-hmm. And some of it is legitimately truth, mm-hmm. but it's not embodied truth. Others of it are just doctrines, rules of men that we teach as doctrines of God. There's a lot of that in various forms of Christendom. But if we could see that we have weaponized truth, and it's part of that we talked about last week, the scarcity mindset, the mm-hmm. separatist worldview, we weaponize truth so we can be right.
Yes.
Even within Christianity, to the minute of what exact words do you say during baptism that makes you part of the real group or not the real group? Or what is your belief about this cultural issue that either makes you true believers or false? And that whole weaponizing of truth not only separates us from the world, it also separates us from each other within Christianity.
Yeah.
And then when I read that, I sat there and went, I have never had a quicker answer to anything in my life as to sit here and go, okay, it's the embodiment of truth, capital T, that allows the world to be transformed. And not just having truths and not just teaching concepts and principles, but helping people open up and discover how Jesus is inviting people inside himself. And if we'll embody the truth in the world, then the sons of daughters get to be revealed and God's glory gets to be in the earth. And no time like the present for that kind of stuff.
Absolutely. And I think you pushed back a little bit last week in regards to the idea or the word identity. And yet I think that's what you just said in regards to us embodying the truth, the capital T of who God is in the world. I think that is identity. I think that is because it is us living out of the unique characteristics of who God has created us to be, who God has shown, like who we experientially know God as, and living that out even more in the world as we are discovering it. That's embodying kingdom. That's embodying truth. That is living that out in the world so that others may learn it, others may see it, others may be inspired by it, others may be catalyzed by it, so that they can explore and grow in that themselves.
And if we don't embody the truth, then we're just bashing people over the head with it. That's why I like the word weaponization. We weaponize it instead of the tenderness and kindness and compassion that comes from, even if we're saying difficult things, that we appreciate how hard it is to hear those difficult things, even with Christ, much more if you don't have him.
Yes.
And how easy it is to get lost in the darkness with that.
Yeah.
I came away just, man, ignited and feeling like, okay, there is a way to move forward here. There is a hope. Because this is the thing that I felt like God asked me to do was to write a book about the second coming. Oh, it's not the 666s and the Antichrist. It's not that stuff that we've heard so many times. It's not date setting.
Yeah.
But so I was struggling with how to do that. And not everybody knows this because I haven't shared it too broadly. I'm going to take a risk here with you because we've talked about it a little bit, but it's just grown. About 2.5 months ago, I started having a vision, and it came out of this agreeing with God stuff. It came out of the prayer group that I'm a part of. And during one of those times we were praying, I started to see stuff. I started to see a vision with the most incredible, I don't want to go into the details of it, but it's the most incredible kinds of color and images, and it still persists. I had a piece of it again this morning. So it's 2.5 months. I don't control when it happens. God kind of invites me in. I just sense that welling up in my heart of the spirit and just sense pull away. And what has come out, and it's been a long process, and maybe we'll go into it someday, maybe here at some point, but there's been a series of images that I've been debating. What are these images mean? What are they for? And all along, God's inviting me into the space of seeing his bride through his eyes. The bride who is following him now and learning to, the bride who is lost in the darkness that needs to be invited in, the bride that's was following him at one point and got lost and distracted or just gave up on Jesus. Or I see different parts of this bride. And as I've seen her, I'm praying to her. I'm praying to him for her. Mm-hmm. It's a lot. It's individual people I see, people I don't know. But they come up in my, it's crazy stuff. And I see it through an eyeball, not like there's an eyeball looking at them. I'm looking through an eyeball at, and I think it's gaze with God. Somehow that became more literal. Now I could be going nuts. I've told people, I'll say it here. I told Sarah when this started, I said, listen, either the most amazing thing is going on or in about a year, you're checking me into a mental hospital because I've gone nuts. And I'm not really sure which it is right now, except that these colors and images are not in my control, which I love. They are inviting me to a deeper place in Jesus. I am seeing stuff that has moved the needle. And then I haven't even connected this to on the other side, I got this book I've been working on over here, and I haven't connected these two.
Okay.
Until about 2.5 weeks ago. And I was seeing this stuff and I was praying for them. And I felt like God said, I want you to talk to my bride while you talk to Sarah in the days of your separation.
Okay.
And people don't know, I guess this is on the video, but I would lay on my bed at night when Sarah was gone and I would talk to her and I would ask God to put into her heart the things that I was saying. Not knowing how that works, and I don't know, I'm not a spooky communications, but that's how I talked to Sarah. Some of that started out incredibly pained, excruciating, and questioning, like, why? Why would you do this to me? Why would you not even tell me you were hurting? And because she wasn't hearing it, I didn't think, and I think God could edit and not put the the frustrated stuff there.
Yeah.
So I'd go through that, but they would always end up, what are you going through, babe? How are you hurting? Do you know? There's a way back here. Do you know? I'm here for you. There's nothing that's happened that we can't unwind and want to unwind. And so I haven't thought about exactly what I was praying in a long time, but I felt like God said, talk to my bride and even talk to some people in my life, like you talked to Sarah when she was gone. And I'm thinking this is crazy because I'm saying, Jesus, why don't you talk to your bride? Why would I talk to your bride?
Yeah.
And I'm not thinking about a book here. I'm doing that as I sit in my studio and talk to the bride on God's behalf. Feeling this is weird, but maybe it won't go anywhere. And maybe I'll never share it publicly, but here I am. But I was always feeling like weird, like, why would I be doing this? And now I was playing golf last week with some friends and I'm walking up one of the fairways and all of a sudden the light dawns on me because I'm thinking about, gosh, how weird this feels. And then it was, why wouldn't you be honored if I asked you to speak to my bride? Why wouldn't that honor you instead of make you feel crazy? And the image I had was like, if a bride heard some lies about her groom before the wedding. And she's deciding, I don't want to get married. I don't want to do this. And the groom says, let me meet with you. And she says, no, I'm not talking to you. And then the groom asks his groomsman, would you go talk to my wife and tell her it's not true and that I love her and that I still want to marry her? Tell her. Now that would be an honorable thing, right? There's what's really crazy. One step further, unless you got any questions. You got any questions so far?
Keep going. I do, but keep going on your roll, and I will jump in. Keep going.
Well, the day after, or the I guess it was on a Wednesday, I felt like God asked me to talk to his bride like I talked to mine when she was away and darkness and hurting. And Lewis came over that morning because we get together once in a while, and I just told him, I said, here's the weird thing I'm hearing. And so I was telling him a little of this. His eyes, as soon as I mentioned talking to the bride like I talked to my wife, his eyes, he kind of startled. And I looked at him, what? He said, I had a dream about this. Mm. Had a dream when? He said, last night. Back the last two nights. Same dream, except the second night it was fuller. And then he told me the story. And he took a picture of me. When Sarah was gone, I would go into her garden, which many people have seen pictures of. I'd go in her garden and I'd pray for her there. Mm-hmm. And he one day took a picture of me from the house out in the garden. I'm sitting out there with my dog and I'm praying. He didn't tell me he took the picture. He thought, man, it's too intimate. Maybe I should throw this thing away, but he never did. And then about a year later, he said, I took this picture of you when you were in the garden. And Sarah, would you want to have it? You want me to throw it away? What do you want me to do with it? I said, I want to see it. Mm. And oh, it's a tender picture.
Yeah.
And he said, the dream started there. Two angels walked through the fence behind you, the back of the garden. They walked behind you. One had a silver pitcher in his hand and one had some other metallic kind of pitcher. He didn't know what color to call it. And the first one came up to me and he poured it over. And Jesus is standing next to Lewis in the dream and says, that's my endurance. Mm-hmm. Wayne is going to need this endurance. And then after the angel poured it over me, he kind of pinched my shoulder, kind of like, hang in there, buddy. Gotcha. And then walked out of frame. The second one, different color pitcher, poured it over me. And God said, this is my patience. And Wayne's going to need lots of this. And then he shrugs my shoulder and moves out of frame. And then a third angel appears. And he's got a pitcher of gold. And he starts to raise it to pour it over me. And I'm totally, in the dream, I have no idea any of this is going on. I'm not seeing any of it. I'm not acknowledging any of it. I'm just quietly, not quietly, but I'm praying or I'm talking. And Lewis isn't fixed on me at that moment. And then Jesus walks over to the angels and says, let me do this one myself. And he pours this gold over me. He said, this is my love and peace for Wayne and Sarah. And then Lewis begins to hear me. And he starts describing the prayer times I had for Sarah on my bed at night when she was gone. He talks about me just sitting there saying, oh, why did this have to happen? Why would you? I was saying, Sarah, why did you do this to me? Why couldn't you come and talk to me? Why couldn't you? And he said, and Jesus was behind you answering your questions, but you couldn't hear him. So he'd say, why did this happen to me? And Jesus would say, do you really want to know? And I would say, it's just not fair. It's not fair. And Jesus would say, of course it's not fair. But I'm not hearing any of that in a dream. And I didn't hear any of it in real life either. So, but he said, somewhere down the road, the words I was saying to Sarah shifted from a focus on me and my pain to her and her pain. Sweetheart, what are you going through? You're all alone. I'm afraid for you to be alone in the darkness. I'll be here for you. We don't have to be married again. If I can just walk with you and love you and be a part of your life, then that'd be, I mean, I'm just, and he said, when the prayer all switched to that. And then at one point he said, toward the end of it, you said to Jesus, and even though you don't know he's there, you're not talking, you're just talking, you're just saying, even if Sarah doesn't come back to me, I want her filled with your joy. Mm. And that's when Jesus turned to Lewis and said, that's all I needed to hear. He said, now I know that I can make him the hero in her story. That's in Lewis's dream.
Yeah.
And so Jesus walked around and then two books appear, a big black book over here. It's written abuse and bad self-esteem and on the cover of this big, thick black book. And he says, this is Sarah's story in the world. And there was a big red book filled with beloved and I'm enough and filled with those things. And Jesus said, this is her story in me. Mm. And I'm going to make you the hero in her book. And that's where it ended. Mm. And so by then I had a pretty good idea that those two things would happen the same week. Jesus telling me to talk to his bride. And then I got to talk to Sarah. And then Lewis has this dream, which is just bizarre as could be. So I begun doing that. I've begun in a regular way. When I feel invited into it by the Holy Spirit, I sit there and talk to his bride for him. And then I saw how that began to shape the book I was writing.
Ooh, okay.
I had to go back and rewrite the whole first chapter because some of it was caustic. Mm. Talk to her like you talk to Sarah. Scriptures that came to mind was Isaiah 40, comfort my people. Speak kindly and tenderly to her. The Hosea 2:14 scripture we've talked to a number of times. I will lead her out and there I will speak tenderly to her.
Yes.
I've thought of the Valley of Dry Bones, where Ezekiel and God go out and there's this dry bones, and God says to Ezekiel, can these bones live? And Ezekiel's the brightest guy on the planet. He goes, you alone know, O Lord. Not saying yes, not saying no. And he said, speak to the bones. And so for whatever crazy reason, I've begun to, I'm not only doing this alongside God in ways that is just changing my heart, maybe more than the people I'm actually talking to. But I'm also finding this new book that I've been holding in my heart for 2 years, finally coming out, being able to say, as tenderly as I can say these words, Jesus is inviting his church back to himself. He stands at the threshold saying, come, you haven't done enough. You haven't burned any bridges. There's nothing you've done that I can't get past. You're welcome back into my heart, and I want to make you at home there. Isn't that crazy?
So you don't know this, but you and I talked about this a little while ago, and you shared a little bit about this.
Well, I do know that.
Well, that part, yes.
Okay, good.
But since then, it has radically reshaped the way that I've been praying.
Wow.
There's been some pretty intense things that have been going on in my family, my immediate family, and then my extended family, and specifically with Jess, and some very intense things. She's going through some pretty deep battles right now. And when you and I talked about this, I just felt this nudge from Father to start every single night praying, like talking to her. So I don't go to bed when she goes to bed, sit out, and I want you to talk to me about her, because she's not ready. She can't, like, basically got the sense of, I want you and I to talk. I will take care of it. But I want you to talk to me about your wife and about Jess and the things that you're holding in your heart for her. And it has been, we're by no means out of the woods yet, but it has really reshaped the conversation and even how I'm having the conversation with Father about Jess's heart and some of the things that we're navigating together as a couple. And man, it has been, honestly, I don't even know how to describe it other than it has radically transformed the way that I talk about my wife, the way that I see my wife in the day to day, and some of the other situations that are going on. Man, it's interesting. It's interesting as I hear you process through this, and you and I've talked a little bit about it. My heart has been so full in regards to the way that Father is inviting people all over the world to encourage and to speak to his bride, to begin to advocate for his bride in ways that I don't know if we necessarily have in the past, or there, it has been going on and I just wasn't aware about it. I don't know. I have no idea. Only God knows, as Ezekiel would say.
For
only
sure.
You only know that, Lord. So I'm going to leave that in your hands. But man, just the invitation of that. And I love what is coming out of just the conversation for you, and that I love that your world in the space that it's in at almost 70 years old, having walked with Father for a very long time, like, it's still full of mystery. It's still full of the unexpected. There's still this, like, I've been doing, like, you know, speaking from your perspective, I've been doing this for almost 70 years, and I feel like I barely have a sliver of knowledge of what he's up to and in the world. And that, like, is just such a delight to experience and to watch it be lived out as a younger believer, as somebody who's, you know, in his late 30s going into this. I remember you talked to me about the endurance, the patience, the love, and the peace, like the four. And I remember my heart saying, going into some of the things that I knew Jess and I were going to be going into, saying, Lord, I need that. I need those pitchers poured over me as well. I need some of that endurance. I need that refreshment. For me, refreshment was one of them as well.
Well, Lewis said in the dream, like, love and peace were everything. If love and peace finds a home, so will refreshment, so will joy, so will everything else. And in fact, even that's where the patience and endurance comes from. It's from the love and peace. That's what Lewis had the sense of in the dream as we talked about it further. And for me to realize that even we've talked about those believers that seem deluded by whatever fury, Christian charismatic revival fear, however we talked. And I mean, I can get my ire up in times past about people who do things in the name of God that I think deface God. But to even begin, I don't have that ire anymore. I mean, to begin to go, what changed things for Sarah was speaking to her tenderly. And not just me, but therapists. Trauma victim is not served by somebody yelling at them to think differently, to forgive, to act better, to do whatever.
Correct.
It's the kind and tender words that open the door. And that's what Jesus has for the whole world, not just for, quote unquote, his people.
Yeah.
But for the whole world. Anybody lost in darkness, anybody lost in their religious performance, anybody lost in their deconstruction of faith. The shepherd's still waiting here saying, I love you. You have not, there's a way for you to come home. There's a way for us to make this happen. It's the prodigal father, right? But now this is the groom of the bride saying, come home to my heart. You've wandered away. You've believed things that, and it was true for Sarah. She believed things that weren't true. She would tell you that now. She has on the podcast. She did.
Yeah.
She got sucked into a way of thinking that destroyed our relationship without my participation.
Yeah.
And that gives me, when I said, God, I don't know what to say. Mm-hmm. And because I'm looking at the world or the church in the world, then I just go back to look at Sarah. Mm. How you felt about Sarah in that moment captured my heart for her and for the world and for the bride. Yeah. So you'll express well the passion I have. And like you said a minute ago, a lot of people are doing this. I hope that that's true, because part of me going, I don't know if anybody that's ever brought this up to me. So this is just weird that I would be doing this. And I hope it's not alone. I know the prayer group we have, we haven't even talked about this yet. We will talk about it tomorrow when we're together.
Yeah.
This part of it. But I love the space. And I've even gone to tell Sarah, if I am going nuts, I don't even know that I would want to stop now. The sense of presence, the feeling, the sense of what I can do. And this has changed my passion for prayer. I've never been one of those real intense prayer warriors, you know, fighting out stuff.
Yeah.
But man, I love being with Jesus about his bride. I love that. I can't wait till I get invited into that space again. Hmm. It's such an active kind of praying. And it's not just sitting here making requests, it's seeing stuff that the Holy Spirit seems to be revealing. And it's filling my heart with such joy that it didn't even have to culminate in a book for me. The book I was going to do already. And it reminded me when I was speaking to the bride one day on his behalf, I felt like he said, I asked if you would speak for me again. And you are. And I thought, speaking for me, would you write another book? I thought that's not really what it was. And I don't think the book will have as much impact as the engagement I'm having with God in this. And even if it's me contriving it all, this is the best way to go out. The beauty of these colors, I was describing it to somebody and they said it's like living colors. I'm going, that's exactly it. It's not just blues and reds and it's textured deeply, and then they take on an image, and then the image means something that brings another thing. And so it's like this in reverse way. We talk about Sarah's memories clarifying, where she'll see a room and feel sense pain in her, darkness in the corner, fog, whatever. And then over days, the memory clarifies, tell every person in the room what was being said, what happened. Then she knows. This is the reverse of that. This is a fog through clouds, you see something, And then it all begins to get clearer. Mm. And but it's not pain, it's beauty. It's the most exquisite, crazy kind of beauty. And it's changed my heart for the lostness of the world and the lostness of deluded brothers and sisters. Mm. And it's taken all the vitriol out of my heart, and there's just tenderness there and connection and desire. And I just sense God's passion to come to his bride, and his bride is not listening to him because they've been hurt and wounded and angry. And somehow me, and I hope others who are hearing this going, yeah, I've been doing that too. Or you know what? Maybe Jesus would, don't copy what I'm doing, but let Jesus invite you into a way of doing something. Yeah. If he so does, but capturing that heart of tenderness speaks softly and tenderly to my people. It's entreating language.
Yeah.
Not defiant. And I was flipping the channel the other day and heard one of the old preachers. I was surprised the guy was still alive, man. this guy's old and he's an end time talker, and he's just dishing out the vengeance like nobody's business. And I'm like, wow, I am a million miles from that. Whatever that is, well, I didn't like it when I was more back in those days.
Yeah.
But it really just does not smack of God's beauty or his tenderness or the desire as he had. If sin is trauma, and I hope we get back to that discussion someday. Yeah. If God sees sin the same way we do trauma, then it's that goodness of God that leads to repentance. It's the tenderness of God, not the brash, bully, bang on humanity, punish them for getting it wrong. But it's that entreaty to his people of, I love you. I want you back.
I almost wonder if this is what Paul was getting at when he was talking about the different teachers and the different, you know, they had the different false motives or whatever, like varying motives. But he's like, as long as the gospel, as long as kingdom is being shared with the world. And I've always struggled with that passage. Because it's like, well, no, that's marring God's image. That's distorting, you know, like, and yet there was a piece of me that was still, there's a piece of my identity that was still tied to that outcome. And I feel like Father has been slowly removing that piece that's tied to the outcome, to where it's now, it's like, okay, like, I wonder if that's what Paul was starting to hint at or trying to unpack is through that collective worldview of if I'm going up, if I'm increasing, if my heart is increasing and your heart is increasing, then we're all moving together. There's this mutual moving of into a deeper understanding and love and the experience of who God is. And I don't know. I just, as you're talking, that passage came to mind, and I'm like, is this what Paul was saying? Was like, even though I know that they have ulterior motives, even though I know that there's some corrupt, there's humanity, there's broken humanity here. There's still twistedness here. But Lord, I don't have to defend you. I don't have to fight that with vitriol. You are the one that's in this. You are the one that's drawing hearts into you, to your work, increasing their understanding of the kingdom. You don't need me to defend you in that space. And I don't know. What are your thoughts? Like that as you were talking, that popped into my mind. And I'm like, okay, Lord, I don't know what to do with that. Like, is that what Paul was actually getting at? Because I hate, like, I don't know.
How I would see it differently is in the very early stages of Christianity, there were the message that Christ has died to redeem sinners. It was going out in the world, even if people were doing it with bad motives.
Okay.
Even if they were profiting off of it, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. To me, it didn't seem like it was so much they were disfiguring it by claiming to be God's people and treating others badly in terms of yelling and screaming. So I do think there's a woundedness in my heart when I see God being defamed by people, particularly those who think they're his followers.
Yeah.
It's just sad. They've got this legalistic, bash people with God kind of rhetoric and really believe it's true, really believe that's what the world needs, because they live with God out of fear and they need other people to respond to that fear. Mm. but it's sad for them and it's sad for the people they hurt. But does God need us defending him? No, he doesn't. And I don't think that Paul, that would be Paul saying, you know, I don't care if people are defaming God while they're, because he, no. In other places in his letters, he's going, don't listen to this guy. Don't have anything to do with that guy, because there are destructive elements among the family. There are always going to be people to profit off of God's stuff. They see godliness as a means to gain, as he wrote to Timothy.
Yeah.
And I, as I struggle with this book, I'm saying, God, why would you want me to write this? And one of the things is because you don't need to market it. You don't need to make money off of it. You're not going to shape the message that I want to share with my church. You're not going to distort it to make it more marketable.
Yeah.
And he's right about that. So one of the things that maybe, okay, why me? Because you don't need it. You don't need the income. You don't need the notoriety. You don't need to build, you're not building a kingdom for yourself. You're not going to pull people into some kind of forced community of people loyal to you or whatever. And he's true. I'm not. I want people to be connected with the groom. That's the only reason I would sit down with the bride at some point is to get her reconnected to the groom.
Yeah.
Not to take his place with her, for Pete's sake.
Yeah,
he is really a rat. You ought to come and love me and say, why don't we get married? I mean, that'd just be, you send the best man or a groomsman in for that, and you just, it's the wrong thing.
Yeah.
But I think God, I think Paul can still say there's false ministry out there for sure. There's ideas to be afraid of and to walk away from. But that Jesus can make himself known through even the most insincere preacher is true. People are thinking about God. They're in a place. They open their heart, and then the Holy Spirit gets to take over. So it doesn't matter what that man or woman had in mind who was trying to take possession of them as his sheep. But I love that. And this is what I think what's happening. I think in the disillusionment and deconstruction of faith by so many people, is they're going to find a living God underneath it all that they didn't find when they were in it.
And yes.
That's the only thing that's going to matter. If they don't, then it doesn't matter that they deconstructed their religious habitat. Mm. What they really need is to have Jesus arise from within. The Jesus who makes himself known in their heart and then capture their love. So that they can go on a journey and then find out what's truth and error about things they believed and what sidetracked them and why they gave in to things that were not all that God wanted them to be. But he's got to capture their heart first. That's where it's got to start. And I'm hopeful that in this day of growing delusion and disillusionment, that it's going to open the door for many, I hope, or I don't know. Could be a dozen. But if it opens the heart to say, you know what, this is the Jesus I want to know, and I want to walk with him, and it doesn't matter if it brings me anything other than him.
Yeah.
And he can walk with me through my life. And if we are getting toward the desperate times at the end of the age, then I'd rather go through it with him than gut it through on my own.
Yeah.
It's a crazy, crazy experience, kind of crazy to talk about it. I don't know where it's going to go from here. I don't feel like I need to hold on to it, just like this that we talked about before, this agreeing with God's stuff. It's all like a big puzzle that's kind of come together, and yet there's so much of it still where there's mystery, and I don't know where that's going to lead, if it leads anywhere. But I know it has reshaped my heart for the writing of this book that I want to do, and I'm gonna do it by chapter and chapter on the blog. I'm only going to combine it into a book once it's done. I'm excited. Excited for where this leads. And that's as Sarah and I are getting ready to take the RV out again, go catch that eclipse in Texas, and then
okay.
And then head out from there. We may get as far as Mississippi. There's some talk we may even go clear to Virginia, but I doubt it. That's just a lot more driving than I know people. You always complain about the driving. Yeah, eight, nine hours behind a wheel. I'm not a truck driver. Not my job. We're getting ready to go again. So April, May, June, we're going to kind of be out and wandering around the U.S. If people want us to come near you, let us know. We'll see if we can work it out.
Doing more of a southern track this time, sounds like, then?
Yeah, early spring. So we're going to see what the weather allows. We may go north as the weather warms up. We'll see. Eventually want to hit Denver on the way home, see our son. So,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And take the puppy for the first ride in the RV. It could be chaos. Sarah was out cleaning part of it up today, and she found the dog standing on the dashboard, the puppy. So she said, she looked at me and said, she needs to learn some RV manners. So we will be working on that.
Thank you for traveling with us today on The God Journey. You can join this conversation by visiting thegodjourney.com.